This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Good morning, everyone. So nice to have all of you here this morning for the beginning of this training period. I was just thinking it's kind of appropriate that we begin the ongo with the lights out, but it's not completely dark. So some delusion, some enlightenment. And through the course of the ongo, things will become brighter and the earth will come to life. So traditionally, ongo is conducted during winter and summer. So the winter ongo sort of centered around the Buddha's enlightenment, and the summer ongo is its counterpart. We do it in the spring and fall, in large part because of the inclusion of the lay sangha, which is really a recent thing. Traditionally, there would be no sort of lay ongo, as it were. I think at the Zen Center of Los Angeles, Mazumi Roshi began including the lay sangha because it was such an important part of the community there. And we have continued that, of course. And so in a way, it's something we've been doing for many years, the years we've been here, but it's also an innovation in Buddhism. And so I was just talking with Shoen this morning as training coordinator about continuing to explore really how to do that, to do ongo within the lay sangha. And for those who we were supposed to be live streaming today, for all the students who couldn't be here, who at this point probably think we just forgot them, we didn't. things beyond our control. So ongo is a period of intensified training. We're studying the body-mind study of the way, an important teaching of Master Dogen's 13th century Japanese master, a very rich and powerful teaching. We have used this before in past years, but it was quite a number of years ago, and I have been waiting for an opportunity to bring it back around and to work with it again. And Dogen begins that teaching by saying, without practice, the Buddha way cannot be attained, and without study, it remains remote. Nanwei, the Zen master Dawei, said, it's not that there's no practice and no realization, it's just that they cannot be divided. And so ongo is very much a practice of not dividing. Ongo means peaceful dwelling, and it's a very powerful and wonderful thing to hold in your mind. What is peaceful dwelling? How do we practice these 3 months as peaceful dwelling within our own body and mind, within the body and mind of the Sangha, within our world at large? And we do this through our study and our reflection on the teachings, on our practice, on our insights and realization, and our embodiment of those insights. And we usually speak of ongo as an intensification of practice. So in residential training beginning next week, coming off of the summer training, the winter training period, we will wake up earlier, we'll do more zazen, we'll be in longer periods of silence, we'll do formal meals in the morning, there are more teaching taking place, our sessions will be more intensive, and so on. And so we ask lay students to, in preparation for the ongo, to consider how do you intensify your practice and what does that mean, right? Because that can mean different things. The easiest way to think of it is sort of in terms of quantifiable, measurable things like the amount of time that you're sitting. But sitting, essential though it is just one part of our practice. Sitting on the cushion, that is. And so to think in terms of, intensification that brings you closer, that helps your life be more immersed within the Dharma, that helps your life itself to be more true and in alignment with your aspiration and your vows, that helps to sharpen and strengthen your focus, your practice of the Eight Gates and the Eightfold Path, that helps to cultivate compassion. It's a nice way of thinking of intensification, to intensify your compassion. What does that mean? And so as Dogen makes clear in this fascicle, study is an essential part, not just of this Anga, but of the Buddha Dharma. I spoke earlier of how one of the steps of the Bodhisattva path is to cultivate an insatiable desire to study the Dharma. Right? An insatiable desire. We normally think of desires as being dukkha, suffering, born out of craving, but here, this is a life-giving desire that is insatiable because you're that hungry for this life, for liberation, and also because there is no ultimate satisfaction. That no matter how deep we go, no matter how clear we become, no matter how compassionate we bring ourselves into the world, there's more. The Buddha's quoted as saying, owing to your study, you can now understand the Dharma. Owing to your study, you can cease from creating harm. And you can be all about practicing good. Owing to your study, you can give up what isn't important. And owing to your study, you realize nirvana. You know, oftentimes in the teachings, we speak about how everything is essential. All things are sacred. Don't disregard a single thing. And that's true. And it's also true that in our world, and particularly in our time, there is so much that is not important, that is put forward as important. We live in a kind of factory of superficiality and facsimiles of things. And so to study what is true and vital and essential and real, and to study the Dharma in all things, in the Dharma and in all dharmas, inner and outer, in living and dying, in the animate and inanimate, in what is essential and what is superficial, there is much to see in what is unimportant. Past and present, self and other. In other words, prajnaparamita. To realize in all things there is just one essence. In two, nothing is divided. Nothing stands opposed. Peaceful dwelling. In the fascicle, Dogen said, for the time being, let us say that there are two approaches to studying the Buddha way, to study with the mind and to study with body. And in his title, he unifies them, body-mind, study of the way, which is important. We don't have a word for that. And so Kaz Tanahashi, in translating this, hyphenates body-mind. One reality, one living thing, one unified whole. But Dogen says, as a way of studying, for the time being, let's say there is a study of mind, and with mind there is study of body and with body. And so we can think of Anga as a way of intensifying this study, to enliven our study, to make it more immediate. You know, every practitioner wants to experience the Dharma intimately. That's realization. We want to experience our life intimately. That's fulfillment. And to experience it as an integral and integrated part of our life. But then why then do we so easily and habitually divide and separate? And so in our daily practice, body-mind study of the way is to not divide what can't be divided, but to practice as one unified whole. And so in Zazen, What does it mean that body and mind are one reality, one whole? In liturgy, in the chanting of a sutra, in a prostration, what is body and mind study of the way? So the Buddha said after his enlightenment, when he considered whether he would and could teach, he said, this Dharma is so subtle, it's profound, it can't be perceived by the senses. But our senses are what we have to come into contact with things. And so we have to use our senses, body, mind, to realize the true body, to realize the one mind. But then that should make it clear that how we then study makes all the difference. So in our training, in our within the Sangha, in our work, in our relationships, body-mind study of the way. And to realize, as Dogen speaks of in this fascicle, that the whole universe is here, which means that we're studying the whole universe. We're studying all of time. What would you leave out anyway? Right? What would we leave behind? How do we leave things out? How do we disregard? Seeing something that is unimportant doesn't mean that it is somehow apart from body-mind. Doesn't mean that it's somehow outside of Dharma. It just means it's not a worthy path for liberation. It's not based fundamentally in an intention that is true. How do we create the walls and boundaries between what is practice and what is not? So then we can conclude, okay, so then everything is practice, everything I do is practice. And we're already in trouble. Right? Because in actual fact, that's not going to be true. We're not actually going to be practicing every single moment, unless you're a completely enlightened being. There are going to be gaps. There are going to be moments, perhaps many moments, where those walls appear, boundaries manifest. And we do divide between what is practice and what is not, what is sacred and what's mundane. Dividing what ultimately cannot be divided. Dogen says to study with mind means to study with the various aspects of mind, such as consciousness, emotion, intellect. So he's calling out these different aspects of mind and saying to study with mind means to study these aspects. And again, the question becomes, how do we study consciousness? How do we study emotion? How do we study intellect? So that it's a study and not an obsession or an infatuation or an attachment. And remember that mind is heart-mind, also one word, one reality. And so that we can think of these different aspects of mind, the way-seeking mind, bodhisattva mind. Dogen speaks of the bits and pieces of straightforward mind. What is that? The mind of Buddha, the mind of all sentient beings. Dogen also speaks of mountains, rivers, earth, the sun, moon and stars is mind. So clearly we're not just talking about our intellect or our thinking mind. We're not talking about the brain. As Bodhidharma says, I speak, you listen. This is nothing but mind. We turn towards, we turn away. This is nothing but mind. So many teachings, particularly in the Zen tradition, are pointing to this nature of mind. Every day we chant, morning mind is Kanzeon, evening mind is the great heart of compassion. This very moment arises from mind. This very moment is not separate from mind. This is a very wonderful way of just describing this is what Ango is. And so we can call these different aspects consciousness, intellect, emotion, feelings, sensations, memories, worries, concerns, invocations and vows. And all of these are important. All of these are part of our study, to study all aspects of mind. Because again, what would you leave out? What would you consider as unimportant? And then Dogen says to study away with the body means to study the way with your own body. It's the study of the way using this lump of red flesh. The body comes forth from the study of the way. Everything that comes forth from the study of the way is the true human body. So again, he's making clear, this is your physical form, this lump of red flesh, but it's also what? Everything that comes forth from the study of the way is the true human body. Is this separate from this physical form? He says the entire world of the 10 directions is nothing but the true human body. The coming and going of birth and death is the true human body. You have one. I have one. In each and every moment, we occupy this lump of red flesh. We look through these eyes, hear through these ears, touch through this skin, think through this mind. But everyone is doing that. And there is so much confusion and so much suffering. So what is this true human body? There's a true human body that comes in and out of the senses. It has no rank. If we say that it's just this lump of red flesh, then why does, if we say it's not this lump of red flesh, right? We have to transcend that. Then why does Dogen say, study the way using this lump of red flesh? But if we say it is this personal body, this karmic body, then we go against the teachings. The Buddha said, if you see me in this form, you don't see the Buddha. So what is this true human body? We wake up. Our feet touch the floor. We put on our clothes. We open a door. We have a cup of tea. We walk down the street. We cry. We laugh. What is the true human body that has no rank and comes in and out of the senses? This fascicle, which we'll be focusing on, concentrating, kind of using as our core teaching during the Ango, because it's Dogen's teaching and because it's Dharma, it's talking in every word and every phrase about you and me and our lives. And so that's an important way to study it, right? To not see it as something abstract or theoretical or ancient. He's using a particular way of expressing himself, but everything does that. Everyone who writes, everyone who speaks does that. Right? And so on a certain level, we have to enter into his mind. How wonderful to enter into the mind of this deeply enlightened being. Which means on a certain level, we have to let go of our mind. In order to see the way the world, he sees the world as an enlightened being, we have to let go of any attachments we have to how we see the world. This is part of hearing and encountering the Dharma. I spoke last week about, you know, these different vessels of encountering the teachings, that there's a vessel that's turned upside down like a cup, right? Nothing can get in because it's turned upside down. It's walled off. It's not paying attention. There's also the cup that's full. It's brimming. It's spilling over. So nothing can be poured in because it's already got it. Maizumi Roshi spoke of study as appearing in different ways. He said we can skim when we read Dharma texts such as this. We can just sort of skim over the words. Right? Our eyes see the words, but we don't actually take anything in. We can study very carefully. We can memorize the words, bring them into your consciousness. And this is a wonderful way to study, is to take a phrase or a line that you want to understand better or that somehow has power for you or that you want to study more and bring it into your mind and memorize it so it's in your consciousness. It goes with you. He said we can read quietly, which is a very important aspect of study, to read quietly. In the same way that when you do Zazen, you don't have music on, I hope, right? Or the TV, unless there's one in the house and you have no control over that, right? But you're not actively, you're trying to sit quietly, right? So that you can see the lack of quiet in your own mind and bring that quiet forward. And so quiet reading, which means putting aside time and space, like it matters. Like when you sit down to do Zazen, that time matters. So how we approach the seat matters. It makes a difference. So if we arrive at our seat in a kind of restless, disorganized, chaotic way, that's going to be our meditation. Right? But if we've actually prepared, because it matters, then when you arrive, you've already begun. And it's regarding your practice as something that is important. And that has a kind of a feedback process, right? When you convey that in the way that you're doing things, in the way that you handle that space, that comes back into your consciousness simultaneously and conveys the sense of import, significance, depth. And so too with reading. You can chant it. Bring it into your voice, right? A different way of encountering it. And all of us have experience with doing that. Maizumi says you can also read with your body. You can read with your mind. How is that? To read in contact with the body. To read in contact with the mind. And he also says there's reality reading. It's like reality experiencing reality, reality reading reality. And so the study itself is a study. One of the things we do during Ango, which is very simple and therefore should not be underestimated, is the concentration practice. Right? And we encourage students to just take something that you do every day, very simple. Making your bed, making a cup of coffee, walking down the stairs, opening doors, turning on a light, answering the phone. Something that you do and you know you do forgetfully. You know that when you do it, you're not there. And you decide for the next 90 days, I'm going to be there. I'm going to do this like in that moment, that's the moment. I want to show up for that. I don't want to miss that. I want to just study that, the simplicity, the bare quality of that. Something very ordinary. What else is there, really? Dogen says in this fascicle, to bow all the way to the floor and to bow standing is dignified bearing in motion and stillness. I'm going to think of that as body-mind study of the way. What is happening in that prostration? Right? We speak about it in different ways to try and help students gain access or develop faith in this ancient practice of bowing. But that doesn't ultimately convey. Dogen speaks of it as dignified bearing. What does that mean? He doesn't mean just looking good. painting a decayed tree and polishing a brick of dead ash continues without stopping. That's a line to carry in your mind. What is he saying? This is Ango practice, what he's saying right here. Paint a decayed tree. Polish a brick of dead ash. What is he pointing to? And let it continue without stopping. Then he says, even though calendar days are short and urgent, study of the way in this manner is profound and deep. And so at the very beginning of Ango, he's reminding us these days are short and they're urgent. They pass quickly and there is an urgency present today. This is how to study. This morning as I was preparing, I was remembering a line from one of my favorite poets, Lee Young Lee, who said, then you will remember that your life is a book of candles and each page is read by the light of its burning. An important part of Ango is Sangha. An essential part of Ango is Sangha. So remember that traditionally, monastics during, in between Angos would be wandering on pilgrimage. They'd be visiting different monasteries or temples. They might be at their home temples. So this is a tradition that's been going for a long, long time. And in fact, training, the development of one's training was often kind of measured by the training period. There are koans where the student says, the teacher says, where did you spend the last training period? That's what they're talking about. Who did you study with? So how many training periods a monastic did was a kind of indication of what their practice was, of what they were about, what had they been doing during their short and urgent days. And so then you can imagine when coming together, what that would have been like, right? To come together and probably see people, practitioners that they knew, meet old friends, but also people that they had met before. And then for the next 90 days to live in a cloister, which meant they didn't leave, right? Hosan traditionally was like, you wouldn't even recognize it. All right, shave your head, clean your clothes, begin again. And so, you know, we practice this in a slightly different way, but the intent is the same. The urgency should be the same. And so coming together then, this oceanic gathering was this incredible, remarkable, wondrous time to actually come and practice together, having been alone. And so it's important during the Ango to really appreciate that and try and, in any way possible to do that. You know, sometimes I hear students say, when I ask them if they're practicing at the temple, if they live in the city, or the affiliate, if they're near an affiliate. And sometimes people say, no, because, you know, I'm able to practice at home. So it's kind of like, you know, if you can't practice on your own, you need the discipline or support of another person, of a Sangha, then go and sit with a Sangha. And it's like sometimes that's very helpful. And so sometimes people will go and sit with the Sangha because that helps them to sit. Great. But there's so much more than that. Something happens when we sit alone that only happens when we sit alone. Something happens when we sit with each other that only happens when we sit together. The Bodhisattva path is training in a deep solitude and in the company of others. That's not just, you know, a warm and cozy thing. It's an essential thing. It's a necessary thing. It's a vital thing for what we want to do. And so I really encourage everyone to do that as whenever possible, in whatever way possible. And of course, some people are very limited in their ability to do that. So you do the best you can. And that's why we're live streaming, or we would be live streaming if we had power, but we're taping this so students who weren't here today can participate and feel the presence of all of us here, kind of bring that into their home. That's why we're doing mandos periodically during the Ango. I'm doing several that students are invited to participate in. And that's what we're trying to do, is bridge that distance. Dogen said, the sun, the moon, and the stars are seen by humans and by devas, not in the same way. And the views of all these various beings differ widely. Views about one mind differ as well, yet these views are nothing but mind. And so we could look at this as in our particular time of so many views. And in such a time of intolerance and establishing one view, one opinion against the other, right? And an unwillingness to just have simple conversations that might will not be easy, but could be simple conversations. How do we understand Dogen's words? That all the world seen by humans and by devas are not the same. You look through your eyes, I look through my eyes. Other beings look through their eyes, but what do they see? Last night, when I went back after sitting, actually it was the night before, because the lights were still out, and I was talking to Jimon, and our cat, Sophie, was there, and she was fine in the dark, right? And I said, this is what I see. What does she see? I wanted to know, right? What does she see right now? Because she sees a lot more than I do. I can tell. And so what do all these different beings see? And what are the views that they have? And what can that teach us? How can we study that as a way of seeing into the mind of others? Right views, deluded views, lightly held views, righteous views. The various aspects of mind. Seems like we need some of that. The chief disciple during Ango is also in a very old tradition of choosing one of the students who's ready and who's developed themselves to, in a way, to be able to step into this role, which is a training. And so, as with everything else that we do, it's part of study. And so it's not that the person automatically changes. They are in a period of training during which they take on certain roles and responsibilities, primarily to serve. And that's primarily by embodying their practice to the depth of their ability, the best of their ability, and to serve the Sangha, to be generous in serving the Sangha. And that transitions through the Ango to their being a senior student and taking on other responsibilities. So Roxanne has been practicing for a while, most of your life, in fact. Beginning in the 60s with Suzaki Roshi and studying very intensively for quite a number of years out west, and then coming to our Sangha in the 90s, entering into formal training in early 2000s, and then receiving Jikai, and then coming into residency and seeking discernment of the monastic path, became a postulant in 2014, and then was fully ordained last year. And typically or traditionally, the monastics wait until they're fully ordained before they serve as the chief disciple. And so he will be sitting in the seat next to me and be really sort of stepping forward to offer himself and his practice to everyone. And so please take advantage of him and his practice, and also don't be shy about challenging him, because that's an important part of this. Challenge in the sense of developing, in the sense of coming up against mind and body, self and other, all the various views, reality, to come closer The art practice that we're going to be doing, we've already shared with those of you who are doing the Ango, and so we're drawing from a passage of Master Dogen's. And in this he says, "Now, mountains, rivers, earth, and the sun, the moon and stars are mind. At just this moment when the whole universe is mind, what is it that appears directly in front of you?" And this is the heart. What is it that directly appears before you? He says, "Mountains, rivers, and earth do not merely mean the mountains, rivers, and earth where you are standing. The body and mind study of the way does not simply mean your mind of thoughts or your physical form. It doesn't exclude those, but it doesn't merely mean those." He says there are various kinds of mountains. Remember, words are just things that we make up and assign meaning to, right? To communicate something by agreement. And so here he's using words to communicate something. And he's inviting us to come into agreement, which means to come into knowing, an affinity of mind, an understanding that is shared. And so he says there are various kinds of mountains, such as great Sumeru and small Sumeru. He says some mountains extend widely, some rise up steeply. Some mountains sit on the earth, some mountains ride the sky. Some mountains walk on two legs, some mountains have no legs at all. A billion worlds and innumerable lands can be found in a mountain. There are mountains suspended in form, and there are mountains suspended in emptiness. All mountains are suspended. What does that mean? And so again, in studying this fascicle, as you work through it, phrase by phrase, and you might just sit down to study, and you might read one phrase, and that's the completion of your study for that day. You just take that phrase in. Right? You're not ready to move forward. You need to actually take that in more, and you hold it in your mind. What is being suspended in form? What is it to have no ground, no basis, to not be established in form or in emptiness? And then we ask that when we all do our practice as a chosen practice in that moment, that you settle yourself and you bring yourself to this teaching, right? Because remember, he says, at the moment when mountains, rivers, and the earth, sun, moon, and stars are mind, now, what is it that appears directly in front of you? What is the relationship? All things are mind. What is it that's directly in front of me? And then, because you'll have been studying this in other ways, now let's study it in this way. So you pick up a brush or a pen, you start to move, you sing, you make sound, you take a photograph. In other words, you express that which appears directly in front of you as the direct experience that has appeared. In other words, honor that body-mind that has appeared before you. Don't try and control it. Don't try and improve it. Don't project into it. What is it at that moment? How does it appear before you? And what appears before you could be understood as we might say, outside of you. It might be inside of you. Remember the various aspects of body and mind. And to let your expression be direct and playful. And this is very important. You know, in the same way that we need to take our practice seriously and not take ourselves so seriously. We can think of taking our practice serious because it's a powerful way to practice, but not taking it so seriously that it has no playfulness. Creativity in its heart is playful. Dogen is playful in his words. Doesn't mean he's making jokes. It means he's using things playfully, creatively. He probably wouldn't have thought of it that way. But he's using them for what they are, and he's using them for what else they are. He's using them in whatever way he can to serve the Dharma. And we could think of all of Anga that way. How do we use the whole of our day to serve our practice, to serve the Dharma, to serve a vow of liberating all beings? And so during the Anga, we're doing fasatsus and Dharma encounters that will conclude on the last day of this Anga in May, when we'll be in a very different world, looking out. The mountain will have turned green, the flowers will be budding. This is based on past experience, we don't actually know. Right? Have to always be prepared to be surprised. The mountain will be turning somersaults and leaping. And life will have unfolded. Births will have occurred. Deaths will have taken place. Practice will have unfolded. Insights will have been experienced. Barriers will have been met. It's a journey. There will be various retreats and teachings by myself and Hogen Sensei. We'll be doing the Anga intensive later in the spring, which I'm really looking forward to, because what I want to do this time is really focus on this fascicle. There's just so much deliciousness in it. And I really want to focus and really work through it. We haven't done that in a while, and really try and meet Dogen there. There's also a Sangha treasure weekend during the Anga, which is going to be a quiet weekend where we invite folks to come and join us. That Saturday evening is a Sangha treasure meeting, which is an important part of training that we do. That always happens here or at the temple, so a lot of students have not experienced it, so that's a weekend to consider. Bhikkhu Bodhi will be coming later in the spring to teach, which is a wonderful opportunity. He's kind of one of our national treasures. He's translated an unimaginable amount of the Buddha's teaching as a kind of gift to us. And I've said this to him several times, how incredibly grateful I am to him for having devoted so much of his life for making these teachings available to us. It's just really unimaginable. So he's going to be here teaching. We'll be doing Jikai for some students. Anjan will be moving towards, or is accepted for ordination, so we'll be hopefully doing a full ordination during this Anga. So there'll be a lot of living taking place, and a lot where you are, too, for sure. I know we promised a hike last week. We're going to have to delay that just a little bit, just so to make sure we do it at a time when everybody comes down walking and in good shape. So that we're going to do that after the intensive, the Sunday at the end of the intensive. So if you can join us for that, please do. So there's a lot that we'll be doing here. There will be a lot happening at the temple. Both Hogen and Hogen Sensei will be spending a lot of time there. I'll be there also next month, I think, for most of a week doing a Zazen Kai. And in our affiliate groups in Buffalo and Vermont and in New Zealand. Welcome to Gensei, who just arrived from New Zealand. And so they're also going to be participating in the Anga. When Anga begins, the various groups, which are spread throughout the country, meet and do a half-day sit, and then they climb whatever closest mountain there is and begin together as a Sangha. So this web of Sangha really stretches far beyond what we can see and know. We have people in prison, students in prisons who will be joining us in trying to intensify their practice. So it's a wonderful symphony of practice together. So Dogen says, everyday mind, the mind and body study of the way, means to maintain everyday mind in this world or in any world in which you appear. Yesterday goes forth from this very moment, and today comes forth from this very place. While going, the boundless sky goes, and while coming, the entire earth comes. This is everyday mind. So take that with you as you go through the everyday movements of your life. While going forth into your day, the boundless sky is going forth. While coming, the entire earth is coming. This itself is everyday mind. You see, this is what happens when our minds become caught, is they become so narrow, right? Not in a focused way, but in a way that makes things very small. And what Dogen is urging us to do is to practice our mind as it is, as the boundless sky and as the entire earth. He says, this everyday mind opens the gate of the inner chamber. Yes. So, thank you for being here today, beginning the Ango together. It's so important. You know, we are physical beings. And there are so many implications of that, which is one reason this fascicle is so important and so powerful. But the fact that we are physically in the presence of each other makes things possible. It affects us in ways that we can experience and sense and in ways that we can't, but are so important. And so it's important to do what we have to do, which, you know, means arranging things. I know I'm looking at those of you who traveled to be here, some from a very far distance. And I appreciate that. The Sangha appreciates that. It makes a difference. For all of us, it makes a difference. So it's a good way to begin. I'll end with a poem. The training period arrives with mighty winds and snow, an auspicious beginning. Let us study the way, study the self, let us study. In the sun and moon and stars, in walls, tiles and pebbles, in mountains turning somersaults, in clouds leaping high. This very mind fills the great empty sky. Listen, the call that you hear calls you closer. This is a voice from the deep. How can you say it's not you?
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.mro.org.